It is interesting when you think about what has gone on in the past 2 weeks or so, just here in Albuquerque and throughout New Mexico, or just in your own environment, when you look at and you think about the situation where a poor girl was murdered in a Denny's less than 2 weeks ago, or about 2 weeks ago, or no, just last week. Last week here in Albuquerque. Sounds like the old West. Moriarty had its situation where a man goes into an Alco, and the only Alco in Moriarty, and shoots his estranged wife. Fortunately, she wasn't hurt too badly, but he shoots himself in the process here in Albuquerque. All of these things are going on, all these difficulties that people are facing, all the situations that people deal with from day to day, and it just seems to be building. And it's just amazing. Maybe it's because we live in a real-time world anymore, but it seems like we are hearing about so much. We've lost the celebrities. They've talked a great deal about it. That was startling to me to actually see. And I don't necessarily... I have a hard time understanding why Congress would take and have a moment of silence. Now, that isn't to be disrespectful, but how about every time we abort a child? How about every time we see so many things, the afflictions of this world, that we don't take a moment? Oh, celebrity. Oh, fame. It's somewhat disgusting when you think about it in that frame. I don't know about many of you here. How many of you receive the Prophecy News Watch, Internet? Great. Oh, you do. Okay, yes, I thought you might. But I get that each week via Internet. And I would like to share with you some of the topics of just this last week, June 26. Now, I promise that Peter and I did not discuss what we were going to talk about. He didn't share with me. He should have. But he didn't. What can I say? But I want to read some of these things. And we're just going to talk about the topics about what is being discussed in this prophetic view for this 1 week. This first one is, where is America in Bible prophecy? That's the first main topic. Now, what's interesting to me, or one of the criticisms that I would actually maybe have about this is, they will write these topics, but they don't necessarily tie them into specific scripture. And maybe we're supposed to know that. Sometimes I've scratched my head. I wonder about what they're talking about. But it talks about here, where in America... Where is America in Bible prophecy? The first one is North Korea threatens to wipe the U.S. off the map. And, of course, you've been hearing the saber rattling. If you're listening to the news, you hear about lots of problems going on with North Korea. Their discussion about a ship that may have lots of weaponry. I haven't heard any result to that, if it has happened yet. Another topic that they had or have is fading dollar dominance, talking about the United States and particularly about the loss of our power as a superpower economically. And certainly we've done that when we leverage our financial security with all the debt. And terrorists are being recruited in a cyber war with the United States. The second main topic is Israel is God's timepiece. Can't argue with that, can we? Who will authorize the rebuilding of the third temple? There's the question that's asked in this particular article. I haven't read these articles. I haven't had time, but certainly look forward to it. They ask, will it be the Islamic Mahdi, the Sanhedrin, or a prophet? Israel to purchase F-35 stealth fighter jets, one of the most advanced fighters in the world. I wonder why. I mean, as they see themselves being surrounded, it's getting to that point. And, of course, they have to be concerned with our response to their country. They have to understand that there might be a real change in administrative view as they look at what's going on. When you see Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu and Mr. Obama giving the public view of that meeting a few months ago, and Mr. Obama wouldn't even look at Mr. Netanyahu. I don't know if you noticed that, but he was certainly looking at him. He was sitting on the edge of his chair, and I thought that was interesting. Here was the leader of Israel looking at our president, trying to read what he was all about. And what was he really saying? What was the underlying tone? And I wonder if he had any feeling at all. Goes to another one of the articles was Jeremiah to today's Israel. A number two state solution. Number three is a revived Roman Empire. and talks about some feeling like Felipe Gonzalez for the EU president's job might be best. And again, we start seeing the correlation here. If we have any of the prophetic view that most of us do here today, we start seeing some of these things actually being addressed. There are expectations for the Lisbon Treaty to pass this year. What the treaty is in totality, I'm not certain. I'm just throwing these out. You may know. And the Arabs are back on board for a Mediterranean Union. And you've got to wonder why we see that type of situation from time to time where they're put out there and it looks as though they're on board with many things and then suddenly things change. The Gog-Magog War. Russia determined to be a key player in the Middle East. I know you and I believe that that will indeed happen. All parties agree to a peace conference in Moscow. One here that's very interesting for us guys. Now listen to this one. It is addressing the apostate Christianity that many feel is so pervasive within the United States, Great Britain, and throughout most of the Western world at least. Outreach gone bad. This happened, I had to look at this just briefly. This happened in England. One of their leaders in the church promised free beer to men who would attend church. Now, the argument is that it went bad. Some might say, well, what are you talking about? Anyways, the sixth topic is the rise of Islam. Germany has 1 million more Muslims than previously thought. And, of course, another one of the emails that's been circulating around, and I know some of you have also read it, some have sent it to me, was the idea of how the birth rate between major developing countries or countries that are developed, like Great Britain, the United States, and so on, are at a situation where they're actually in a negative growth, and yet the Muslims of that country are increasing exponentially. You need at least 2.1 people as a growth. In other words, people having children, 2.1 as an absolute line. Anything below that and you are suffering. I understand that France is at 1.3, that Great Britain is at 1.6. We are not actually at 2.1 unless we include the migration of the Hispanic community from South and Central America. That is what's holding us at 2.1. Anything below that, again, is a negative growth. If you sustain that growth for any length of time, you can never change that trend is the idea. Now, one thing that's very interesting, in France, the number one name for a boy nowadays being born, just like we might have Tom or James, is Muhammad. Muhammad. Think about that. What's interesting, Muammar Gaddafi of Libya is suggesting, why do much of anything? We can just sit here and wait for it to happen. By the year 2050, in his opinion, even the United States will be overtaken by Muslim view. By the Islamic religious point of view. Burqas for everyone, the Quran in everyone's house, that type of view. And he thinks this can happen. I can't necessarily dispute it. If it were to continue on, not setting any time, I don't know. But when you think about it, it's almost, remember what Khrushchev said when he was speaking before the United Nations way back when? I remember that when he was beating his shoe against the podium, and he says, we will take you from within. Well, maybe not Russia, but it could happen as the Islamic view is set forth by its birth rate. You know what the birth rate typically in Muslim countries is? 8.1. That's a lot of kids. And you have to wonder about all of that. Seventh is an increase in knowledge, new technology. A robot displaying human emotion has been unveiled. The second subtitle would be Welcome to the Nation's Most Closely Watched Small City, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's talking about the number of television cameras and so on to watch movement. And I, again, didn't get too specific as to why. I didn't have the time. But it is interesting if you've ever been, and according to my daughter, you'd be surprised how many places you were being under the camera here in the United States and so on. But when we were in Britain and London, we could really see that all going on. And you really feel as though Big Brother is watching you. In fact, I saw a little something on that one day where an individual threw something on the ground, a litter, and he was chastised by some microphone speaker telling him he'd better pick that up or else. Now, you don't feel too alone when that situation is going on, I can guarantee you. Someone is looking over your shoulder. Finally, as Christian worldviews and issues, this is an interesting one here. Don't know that I necessarily agree or disagree, but I've heard this thought before, and it is, the Bible's Ark of the Covenant is about to be unveiled. An Ethiopian patriarch tells the Pope he will show the artifact to the world. And this was supposed to happen within the week, so I don't know. Stay tuned. There is fury about Apple providing teenagers with the opportunity to buy porn for their iPhones. What kind of society are we really in? It's interesting. I worked with an individual for 25 years or so, and I never talked too much about our religious points of view. He had indicated to me that he didn't really want to hear much about that, that he attended a church where basically the leader of that church in the individual community, Estancia, would tell him what the Bible said, would tell him how to live his life, and he didn't want to hear anything else or pursue it. And a mutual friend of ours died a couple of weeks ago, and he called me to tell me about it. And he shared with me, he says, Jim, you cannot believe this is really, you got to know him and our relationship to understand how surprising this was. He says, Jim, you can't believe, it's just so bad out here. I just can't, this happened. And I, you know what, Jim, you won't believe this, but I've started reading the Bible. And you know what I think? I think the world is going to end soon. I think that we are so corrupt, we are so disgusting to God, that he can't tolerate this much longer. That was startling for me to hear from him. So sometimes we think, I think that I'm so exclusive to what God has given us. I mean, after all, I've been called. I know some of these things. Most of these people don't know anything about this. Well, we could argue that might be a fact. However, you'd be surprised how many people are starting to become aware that things are not good and there must be reason for it and there needs to be change. When he and I worked along side by side for so long, I would have never visualized that from that individual. But he too is concerned, and so many are, as you see so many things going on. Southern Baptist leader states that the church, for many, they are apathetic, indifferent, and have lost enthusiasm. All that's true, and all of that is very important to remember as we approach our own Christian walk and what we do. Now, as I mentioned earlier today, Peter and I didn't talk. We didn't come up with these ideas together. But I, too, want to share with you some end-time view in this. I would like to talk to you about the seven prophecies that are necessary that will occur and will be fulfilled before the return of Jesus Christ. Now, a lot of this information comes from information that you and I have had direct access to. In the good news, for an example, there was a major article in 2008, January, February 2008. Now, that's about 18 months ago. And the fact of the matter is, it's unbelievable what has happened in this world in that past 18 months. I think sometimes we become oblivious to it. We become callous to it. We become cold to the idea of what's really going on in our world. It is difficult to understand when you sit there and you watch the bloody exposure that we sometimes see on the news about those people who are trying to stand up for freedom, who fight for the view of a free election. Do you realize that those people aren't really fighting for their leader? Do you understand that? That the fact of the matter is that this man is not actually totally in control. It's the mullah. It's the mullahs that are really in control there in Iran. It isn't Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He's like their vice president, and yet they're fighting for the VP because they feel as though they were robbed of the freedom that they should have. You and I take so much for granted when we go about our life and we feel so free at times here in the United States. However, I would suggest to you that that's going to change and is changing. We are adopting more of a socialist point of view, I think. That's my own opinion. I don't view that as a good thing. But I do view it as a thing that seemingly is necessary before we get to a point of the return of Jesus Christ. You see, the United States isn't going to be top dog. That's hard for us sometimes to think as Americans. We don't like that type of view. We think we're always numero uno. Sorry, guys. We're diminishing. Do you know that when our Treasury Secretary, what's his name? Do you remember? Thank you, Timothy Geithner, went to China to ask for more money. Do you know they laughed at him? They said in their own view, and they said this was really unusual because the Chinese don't normally disrespect somebody so in public. They'll talk to you very frankly, usually in private, but they don't usually share those things out in the public. But they laughed at him because they can't believe that we have the ability to pay the debt that we have with them now, much less anything else that we might want. So what are we going to do? We're going to print money more than likely. And when you print this money, you will see such inflation. There are those that have been, that I don't know that I can believe this. And obviously, there's a tremendous amount of information. And I remember, if we were to turn to Ecclesiastes 12 real quick, we could read, we're not going to though, but if we were, we read about the whole duty of man. And we read about, there at the end, Solomon is saying, you know what, there's so much out there. There's so much information. Can you believe that? That's when he wrote that book, one of my favorite books in Scripture. But when he wrote that book, he's saying there's a lot out there, guys. There's too much out there, so you're going to have to pare it down. You're going to have to understand what's in priority. The seven steps. All of this stuff that we need to understand has to be pared down. Why? Because with this real-time information, how do we function? How do we get by? But there are those, so I digressed, but they were talking about the possibility of hyperinflation within the United States. Remember how a few months ago we were looking at, I believe, was it on a video that we saw, but it was talking about dealing with some of the African countries and how when they got their wage for the day, it wasn't even enough to buy. I mean, they might have to work a week to buy a loaf of bread, and you really needed to spend the money because the inflation was such that what little money you had was becoming more and more worthless as the days went by, more or less as the hours went by. Now, it's hard for me to visualize that we will get to that point, at least anytime soon, but that is the suggestion that we here in the United States of America might face. So there's so much going on. There's so much change. So I wanted to look at the seven prophecies that must be fulfilled before the return of Jesus Christ. But I want to begin with a parable, and I'd ask that you turn to Luke 21, and of course that's one of the prophetic chapters that we read about the end time. As if we were to turn to Matthew 24 or Mark 13, and in Luke 21, I want us to look at the parable of the fig tree. Why? Because of the season we're in as well. We've just started summer. Summertime and the living is easy. Fish are biting, your mama's good looking, drinking mint juleps, all the song. Cole Porter, I believe, wrote the song. I used to like that song. But anyways, I remember the inference of summer. But I also, more importantly, like to think about, I come from a family of agricultural people. I come from ranchers and farmers. I come very proudly as the son of a rancher. And thing that they always were able to associate was the nature, the physicality, and to bring it up to a spirituality. That's what you and I need to do. We need to understand that. And what was one of the things that ancient Israel looked at when it dealt with summer? It dealt with the reality that they were to be working out in the fields, that they were preparing, that they were going to bring in that great harvest at the end of summer, fall. What did tabernacles point towards? What trumpets, tabernacles? All of this is this coming this to fruition of what we are about here today. You see, yes, we had that early harvest. You're part of it. I'm part of it. We see that. No, let's not gloat too much. But we can see where we are part of God's called. But we have more to do. Remember, we are to be making disciples. So here we are in this prophecy, and we look here, and we see, and he spoke to them a parable in verse 29. Look at the fig tree and all the trees. Look at your surroundings. Pay attention. When they are already budding, and you see and know of yourselves, the summer is now near. So you likewise, when you see these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till these things are fulfilled. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. Now here's the admonition for you and I. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly, because you're not paying attention. We're doing all of these other things. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape these things that will come to pass, and to stand, to have the strength before the Son of Man. Well, that's how I want you and I to approach this message today. Let me get out of the way of this message. This is not really something that I normally deliver. This is not something that I'm going to share with you, and I'm going to tell you this, and I want to say it in a respectful way about what I viewed as my role, you might say, within a congregation that I've been involved with, when I've had this privilege to stand before the body of Christ. I've been more, for lack of a better word, and I'm sure certainly not a pretty one, a cheerleader. I've wanted people to feel good about things. I wanted them to understand, in spite of all of these things that were going on, that there was reason for joy. And there is. There is. But for some reason, and I don't know why, and I'm not trying to overemphasize or read anything into this, I feel motivated to share with you the difficult times that we might face. Because we do need that OO plan that we've talked about a little bit earlier, a message or two ago. Because things are changing so greatly, so fast. Another reason why I was provoked to this message is that Mr. Green provided us with quite a bit of information and the printout. And I love the idea that he gave us this printout, and it was something that he shared with us. And I'm not good at printouts, I'm sorry. But I'm going to get to that point, because I like the bottom where he said author. Stephen Green. And I want to be an author too, so I'm going to get there one of these days. But until then, I'm going to dovetail on his, okay? So if you have any questions about some of these scriptures, and because we're going to get into Daniel, we're going to look at some things that he talked about relative to Daniel and Revelation, look at the printout. Get with the program. Get with the printout and understand that some of these things are very specific and hard for me sometimes to wrap my mind around, but the printout is of real help. Romans 13, verse 11 says, "Put on Christ and do this, knowing the time that now is high time to awake from sleep, for now salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Sometimes summer can be a lethargic period. It's hot. And sometimes it's a slower period, vacation and so on. Sometimes we just need to be awakened." So we're going to do so by beginning with now the first prophecy. Okay? The first prophecy or sign is the human race would have the ability to exterminate itself. Jesus describes this condition of the world just prior to his return in this way. In Matthew 24, verse 22, he said, "If that time of troubles were not cut short, no living thing would survive, but for the sake of God's chosen ones, it will be cut short." That's the Revised English Version. I really like that because it says, it will be cut short. Really, when you think about it, all the people that, well, the nuclear club, that, and everyone wants to join, and it just seems like Iran is really pursuing the issue. Pakistan, I'm a little concerned about Pakistan in that they do have some weaponry, and yet there are those, I saw one of our generals standing before a public conference or a press conference saying that he was relatively certain that they were secure as the Taliban is approaching. Believe me, there are lots of people that would love to press the button. And whether you're talking about North Korea or France or Israel or the United States or China or India or Great Britain, there are lots of weaponry out there. Now, are there those who say that they would like to completely disarm? But I would suggest to you that that's probably unlikely, especially when you look at the prophetic view and what happens. I don't think we'll be doing that with pea shooters. And as Peter talked about the holograms and all of this stuff to make this work, I can't imagine that we'll strip down to the weaponry of old when we have that access. So the first prophecy is that the human race would have the ability to exterminate itself, and we certainly do. And really, that's been pretty much the last 60, 70 years, somewhere in there, 50 years, that has really happened. And especially, it grows greater and greater as we go on. Remember the Islamic view, at least for some, is that there must be chaos on the face of the earth. And their Mahdi will come back because of this chaos. It's their savior, as they view it. And the only way that this can happen is this chaos, this turmoil. Well, I believe in the sense that Jesus Christ comes back because of this turmoil, but not because we should be causing it. As they view this, this is their goal, to bring about this chaos, because they are very strong in their religious view. That's one of the things that I do believe that we have a great deal of problem with, is we don't understand that we're really fighting religious war. We're so busy thinking, oh, no, it's very antiseptic here. We all wear uniforms. We all look good. We don't agree necessarily with something, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to send our boys to war. We're going to send our youth to war. Well, it's not a good way to do things, and I'm not saying that, but you're dealing with people that believe that dying is a good thing, that they will be released from this world that they find very difficult to live in anyways. So that's what's going on. Second prophecy is this, real quickly. A Jewish homeland had to be reestablished. Let's turn to Luke 21. Once again, hey, we're here. Well, that works. Luke 21, verse 20, the destruction of Jerusalem. It talks about, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by enemies, then know the desolation is near. It's going to come to that, and it's getting close, as I view it. I mean, just as a layperson, I think things are looking somewhat catastrophic, but it's not totally surrounded, I guess. But it says, then let those in Judea flee to the mountain, let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. It will come to that point. I believe these prophecies will be totally fulfilled. God said so. Jesus Christ died to set us all free, to bring these prophecies to us. And I can't believe that these will not happen. So do you agree that maybe the first one's already fulfilled? I would think so, as far as the extermination. The second one, not yet. But we're going to continue on. Let's turn to Zechariah, please. Zechariah 14. Let's look at 1 and 2. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the house rifled or plundered. Isn't it in James, and I can't remember exactly, I could find it, I believe, but in James it talks about how eventually gold and silver will have no value. They're just... we'll be tossing it in the streets. It's hard for us to see us getting to that point. At least it is for me. I like money. It's hard for me to understand that it'll have no real value. Although, with the inflationary trends that we are living in, it's going to take a bundle. So we might just find it at a point where it's not of any great value. Zechariah 12, in verse 1, it says, the burden of the word of the Lord against Israel. And we will get to a point of looking at the idea that we can see ourselves as part of those tribes of Israel. It says, thus says the Lord, who stretches out the heavens, lays the foundation of the earth, and forms the spirit of man within him. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding people when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. Interestingly, again, is the fact that there is the surrounding of Jerusalem, and yet it issues this warning to those people and says, guess what? You're going to want to spit that out. Eventually, you're going to pay the price for this siege. I'm not going to turn there, but in Zechariah 14, we always like to read this scripture around tabernacles where it talks about all the nations coming up to celebrate. But what it really talks about there is a remnant celebrating. There's not going to be this full country view. You see, these people are going to get to a point of acceptance and awareness that Jesus Christ is Lord of Lords and that our Father in heaven is on his throne. But it is a remnant. It isn't. It's after lots of things go on and happen. Verse 8 and 9 talks about, in that day of the Lord we will defend the... In that day, the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem. I want to make this reminder that, again, God is on his throne. We are his people. We need faith. We must persevere. The one who is feeble among them in that day shall be like David, and the house of David shall be like God, like the angel of the Lord before him. It shall be in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. So, as we remember, we are admonished to pray for Jerusalem, for Israel, for her people. Really, there are people. In the sense that we are part of the family of God, they too have been set aside by God. Now, we can argue they don't look at things the way we do, and I understand. But we have to have more acceptance of difference, because there is a great deal of likeness. Third prophecy is a reference to the end-time description of the king of the north and the king of the south. Daniel 11 describes the warring kings of the north and the south. But before we turn there, let's turn to chapter 8. And let's look at verses 2 through 5. And again, on the printout that Mr. Green shared with all of us, he has these visual references as well. And you might want to go back and take a peek. In Daniel 8, verse 2, it said, and I saw a vision, and it so happened while I was looking that I was in Shushan, the citadel, which is the province of Elam, and I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. And then I lifted up my eyes and saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram with two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. And this describes a Medo Persian Empire. This is what we're really looking at here. We're looking at this. Some say that it was actually at the same time, and the others say that Persia was come in it a little bit later and was stronger. Some say that it was contemporary with the Neo-Babylonian Empire. I don't know. I'm not going to really stand here and argue these points other than to suggest that these things could have occurred and that this might have some change in your view. But the important thing is it says that this is what happened. This ram came up with these two horns, and one was greater than the other. And I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward, and that no beast could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, suddenly in verse 5, a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. Well, what is it saying there? What is the point? The point is what is trying to be inferred here, as I see it, is that there was such strength in this particular, this goat, that the fury of which he was overtaking the other empires was so great that it was as though he were flying. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Well, that goat is thought to be Alexander the Great, the Greek Empire. And what is interesting about poor Alexander, he was about 33 years old, and about 323 BC, he died. Young man. And his inheritors were actually four generals that divided up the empire. In verse 8 it says, therefore the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in place four notable ones came up towards the four winds of the earth. These are these four empires being created from Alexander the Great. It's kind of interesting to think about how this man was in such great power and yet died at such an early age, but it was all part of God's plan. It was what was intended to bring us to this point. Now remember, this is what is occurring back then, 323 BC. So this couldn't be fulfilling the prophecies that we have as end time prophecies. But we're going to bring those up and we're going to see some of this being brought back and being revived through the descriptions of these scriptures here. Let's now turn to chapter 11 quickly. Now, if I had a reading assignment for you all, if you would allow me, it would be to go back over Daniel, if you haven't done it recently, and just look at these and try to digest all of this, because we don't have time. And so we're going to just briefly touch some of these. Basically, we get to a point of looking in chapter 11, two of the particular entities that were involved, or parts of this empire that were involved, as the split occurred with the four generals. Basically, we are dealing with, what's the man's name? Seleucid? Is that how you pronounce it? Excuse me. Seleucid? Sounds good to me. And Ptolemy. Ptolemy. Okay. These two generals really are what wreak havoc as the king of the north and the king of the south, and trample in the process. Their conflict really tramples Israel. Israel's lost in all of this in actuality. And what happens is the king of the north and the king of the south bring about, interestingly enough, the European Union as they view it, and that which exists in the Middle East as Judah, or, well, not as Judah, but rather as Egypt, as part of the Islamic world. And that is, the king of the north becomes those 10 tribes that are sometimes referred to as the lost tribes, sometimes just referred to as Israel. But they are those tribes that northwest and migrate into Europe, eventually into Europe, and then you can see how Europeans would end up in the United States. The 10 nations, which the king of the north is a European superpower, in essence, that is looked at here. And they were part of the EEC originally in 1957. They can see that progression. And there was a treaty in Rome, and it was signed as, I'm thinking, well, that's what I read. And were part of this European economic community. And that became the European Union. Now, what's interesting about that, until about 1981, it was impossible to fulfill the end time prophecy, which was that there would be 10 powers, 10 countries, 10 entities, because this didn't happen until 1981. It began with 6 countries, and in 1981, Greece became that 10th country. Now there's approximately 27. They still, of course, believe that the 10 countries will come out of there, and they will form this coalition. And we can turn to Revelation, and we will at one point, and where they give up their power and become collectively the power of the beast. I found that interesting, though, that until 1981, there was no way that that particular prophecy could have been fulfilled. Fourth prophecy is an end-time reunion, of the European countries. Daniel 2 and 7 are prophecies of the four Gentile empires that would arise between the time of Daniel and the kingdom. Daniel was actually alive during the Neo-Babylonian or Babylonian Empire, followed by the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and the Roman empires. You can read a description of the four empires in the verses 32 through 43 of chapter 7, I believe, of Daniel. I don't have that in my notes, but I believe that's where we could find it. Daniel 2 talks of God's everlasting kingdom. And again, I always like to take a moment out to remind us that there is purpose in this and that God's kingdom will prevail. Would you turn to Daniel 2, verse 44, please? Daniel 2, verse 44. Of course, we see Nebuchadnezzar's dream and how it was revealed to Daniel. Daniel was unique in that all of these other people that tried to discern the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar would take credit for them. They would talk about their magic, their power. And yet Daniel said it was the great God, his God, that would discern the dream for Nebuchadnezzar. Not him, but that he would share it with him in that way. And in the days, in verse 44, of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it will stand forever. End time prophecy. In Daniel 7, I'd ask that you turn there, and let's look at verses 7 and 8. Well, I would like to read, if you would allow me, from the interpreter's concordance that I have here, or commentary, rather, about verses 7 and 8. Well, let's read them first, okay? Daniel 7, 7 and 8. After this I saw night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. Well, when we think about it being revived, what are we reminded of? That 10 country or coalition that comes from the European Union. That's what I see at this point in talking about an end time prophecy. However, they were talking about it being now the Roman Empire. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. People talking about their great influence, their power. It goes on to say, though, that the Ancient of Days would be on his throne and take care of all of this, really. There are those who believe that these 10 horns were represented, too, by the first six empires that came, or powers that came, as a horn would indicate, and the last four were really that of the Cyclade Empire that came from Alexander the Great. I know this gets, at least I get myself confused, but this is how this is put together, and the European Union suggestion is that this will happen in that manner too. Let me read real quickly that the fourth beast, this is from this commentary, whose terrible appearance is left largely to the reader's imagination, represents the Seleucid Empire, which resulted from the division of territories conquered by Alexander the Great the author's day controlled Palestine. The horns, like those of a bull, are a common symbol of power in the Old Testament, strength. And in this book, they are used to symbolize rulers, the little one being Antiochus Epiphanes. And remember, what did he do? Didn't he desecrate the temple? It took Judas of Maccabees to resolve that issue. So he was the little guy in all of this, which is amazing to me. During most of the reign of his brother, Seleucus the Fourth, Antiochus was a hostage in Rome. At length, Seleucus's son and heir, Demetrius, was sent to Rome to replace him. While Antiochus was on the way home, Seleucus was killed in a conspiracy of Heliodorus. Ordius set a younger son on the throne with himself as regent. On hearing the news, Antiochus obtained an outside help in Asia Minor, eliminated Heliodorus, and secured the crown for himself. The author and perhaps many other Jews considered Antiochus a usurper who had contrived all the events that led to his ascension, and thus counted Seleucus and Demetrius among the three of the first horns uprooted by the little horn, the third being the younger son and possibly Heliodorus. To these three, he may have been added Seleucus's six predecessors in the Seleucid dynasty and Alexander to get to 10. Other lists of 10 have been proposed, however, as well as possible. This 10 is simply a conventional and symbolic number on the mouth speaking great things. Chapter or verse 25. So I thought that was pretty interesting when you get to this point of 10, because I've heard obviously about the 10 horns many times, and yet we didn't really address those issues, and hopefully that might have helped a little as far as looking at who might have been those rulers and how this comes about. There was great strife. And again, remember that during that period, the Jews were always being stomped on. They were always being disseminated within the empires as slaves and whatever, and they had to learn to live a life that was not intended for them. If you turn back to Genesis 15, you can read where there is a covenant with Abram, and Abram is told by our Father in heaven, here is the deed, here is the land. And if you look at that now, there's no way that Israel has anything like it. And in 1948, when Israel finally became a state, within that, the next day, they were at war. And it's been that way for them pretty much since 1948. Getting close. We'll make this a two-parter. Let's look at verses 15 through 28, which start to get to a point of pointing out this coalition, which will come up. And again, we'll be part of that revised or revived Roman Empire. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked the truth of this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts which are four kings which arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever, forever and ever. And then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with teeth of iron and nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. And about the 10 horns that were on the head, and about the other horn that came up before, which three fell, namely the horn which had eyes and a mouth, and spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. And that's the way things seemingly have gone. Until the Ancient of Days came, and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. I believe that time is fairly imminent. I know no one knows the hour nor the day, but we certainly need to understand the season. Why else the parable? Why else looking at summer? As looking at this time of maturation, of being matured, of coming to harvest. The fourth beast in verse 23 shall be the fourth kingdom on earth. And it continues on. And finally in verse 28 it says, this is the end of the account. And for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. I think that's where some of this belongs, in our hearts. Revelation 17, verses 12 through 17. At least Emma's happy. Revelation 17. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, But they receive authority for 1 hour as kings and the beast. And this really seems to come through if you think about the European Union. They don't really have a kingdom, you might say. They don't have this country view because, after all, it's a coalition. But they're given this power from the others. And they receive this power from the other kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give that power and authority to the beast. That has not happened yet. None of us want to give up what we got. You talk to Scarzozzi of France, or you talk to Mr. Brown in England, or you talk to Mr. Obama. They all have, they're jockeying for position, but they're not giving up totally their sovereignty. But yet he says here, this will happen, that we will give up, or these people rather, will give up their sovereignty to the beast. That hasn't happened. And from that point of view, hasn't ever happened in that sense. But it will. I'm going to go ahead and stop at this point on prophecy number 4. We'll get to 5, 6, and 7 when I have the privilege of speaking with you again. And I do want to read this last little bit, which is Luke 21, verse 8, 28 rather, because I encourage you to do this. Luke 21, verse 28. I want you to do this until we can get together to speak about this again in this sense. Now, when these signs, things begin, look up and lift your heads, because your redemption draws near.